When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, and welcome to In the Field, a new podcast from IB Times UK. Each week we talk to journalists and researchers, analysts and aid workers who are at the heart of the stories that matter. This week we're talking China and, you guessed it, Donald Trump. The president tore up the diplomatic rulebook a fortnight ago when he called the president of Taiwan after his election. But instead of kowtowing to Beijing when he realised his mistake, Trump went on the offensive, launching a vitriolic anti-Chinese tirade on his favourite social media outlet, Twitter. Then on Monday, the war of words between Beijing and the soon-to-be most powerful man in the world escalated even further. China seized an unmanned drone in the South China Sea and, as we speak, has yet to return it. As Barack Obama, who still has a couple of weeks left in the Oval Office, tried to make nice with the Chinese, Trump again took to Twitter, telling them they could keep it. To help us understand what lies ahead for Sino-US relations, we're talking to Sean Ryan, an analyst and author that spent some 20 years living in China, and Samina Mistriano, a journalist who lives in Beijing. Sean Ryan wrote a piece for CNN last week looking at Trump's moves on Taiwan, which he called brilliant, some might say quite controversially. Sean, do you want to tell us a little bit about what your thinking was with that op-ed and kind of what you were trying to get across?
Sure, Orlando. It's great to be here. I think, you know, Trump is coming in and he's gotten heavily criticized by the American foreign policy establishment. And I think for sort of upending the status quo by taking a call from President Tsai from Taiwan. Now, when I wrote the piece for CNN, I said that it was a good move for Trump to actually take the call. And I think it's a good move because it sort of lets everybody in Asia know that America is going to pivot in a much stronger way and not be a pushover to other superpowers in the region like a China, as many countries have felt the United States has been under the Obama administration. I also argued that Trump, by taking the call, is setting up the ability to be able to use Taiwan as a bargaining chip in order to get more important things with China done for American security interests, whether it be cybersecurity, North Korea, or an end of the protectionism, which is really creeping up in China today. So the article was written after the call with President Tsai, but before Trump started talking about whether or not he should really acknowledge the One China policy in a recent interview this weekend with Fox News. I think, and we can get into this more, Orlando, I actually think him stating or questioning whether or not the United States should indeed continue to acknowledge the One China policy is very dangerous.
Yeah.
And that's not brilliant, and that's something he should not have done, Orlando.
That was kind of, it was one of Trump's kind of mad middle-of-the-night tweets, wasn't it? I wonder whether he will cease doing that once he's, you know, in the Oval Office.
Well, it's a mistake for him to do that once he's president. So after January 20th, he needs to become more presidential.
Yeah.
But right now, what it's good is because it puts everybody in Asia and everybody in the United States into an uncomfortable position. China now needs to think twice about expansion in the South Sea. It needs to think twice about how it deals with Taiwan. And I think it's very smart that it's cheaper and it's much safer to take a phone call than it is to actually sell billions of dollars worth of military weapons to Taiwan. But once he becomes president, it's a very different situation. And I think Trump needs to, you know, really look at a very fine line between pushing and controlling China in order to protect American interests and crossing sort of a red line, because the Chinese really feel, you know, the one China policy is a non-negotiable. Mm. And it's something that they are willing to sacrifice economic strength and well-being if somebody's going to cross that line. And they'll use military initiatives in order to ensure that they have a one China policy, not just in Taiwan, but in Hong Kong and in the internal areas like Xinjiang or in Tibet. And I think Trump needs to really understand that there's a big difference between, you know, pointing out and criticizing, say, Lockheed Martin, you know, Boeing, you know, fellow Republicans or even Democrats, because people in the United States aren't going to take a nuclear bomb and try to bomb the United States. But if you push China too far, they have weapons and they care about face. They care about the one China policy, and they will push back militarily against Trump. It's a very different game that he's playing. But right now, I think he's playing it quite well.
But and that's interesting. So hypothetically, what does a Chinese military response look like?
Well, I think it could be something like what we saw during the Clinton administration when they launched some missiles near Taiwan. I think you could see an increase of warships going out into the South China Sea and also going near Taiwan. What you've seen is under President Xi, the government has really been sort of slowing down the growth of the army, but he's really been putting a lot of money and resources into the Navy. It's a much more nimble, much more powerful fighting force than it was even just 5 years ago. So I think the initial military push would come from the Navy. The second thing is you're seeing that China likes to use an economic carrot as well as an economic stick to get what it wants.
Yeah.
So instead of just pure military initiatives, it will often punish other countries by blocking trade. So for instance, Mongolia welcomed the Dalai Lama recently, and immediately the Chinese government blocked shipping from Mongolia into China.
Right.
Now, that's a big issue since China is the biggest economic trade partner and pretty much the only buyer of Mongolian commodities. We've also seen this with China and South Korea. After South Korea said they're going to put the THAAD missile defense system, what you started to see is China then blocked a lot of the Korean pop stars from performing in China. A lot of the dramas are not allowed in here. So what you've seen is a lot of stock prices of Korean entertainment companies have dropped 20 to 50% in the last 6 months because China is using that economic big stick to punish South Korea from aligning too closely with the United States militarily. I expect that in the next 3 to 6 months, you're going to see some punishment meted out to American companies. It's going to be a rough time for American firms, but I think European firms are going to benefit from this.
It's interesting because when we spoke, I think a couple of days after the election, you were talking about how one of Trump's benefits could be that he would fight for better conditions for American companies. I suppose you didn't mean so much inside China, though.
Well, I think what he can do inside China is, you know, sort of stand up and say to the Chinese government, look, the protectionism that's happening in the country is not acceptable. Some of the lack of ability for Facebook, Twitter or Google to access the China market is a big problem because foreign investment into the country obviously creates jobs here. It's good for China. It's good for the United States. So I think Trump is good to push back and can sort of end the status quo, which will benefit both nations. I think he's making a mistake by criticizing China as a currency manipulator, because if anything right now, the Chinese government is trying to appreciate the renminbi. I think if the Chinese government hasn't been intervening in the foreign currency markets, you'd actually see a much faster depreciation. So in general, China is actually what I would call one of the more responsible players globally when it comes to their currency policies and trade policies. But Trump should criticize for the issues that really affect American interests, like protectionism, copyright issues.
I'm interested in how all this is being played out in the media, because, again, we spoke after the election and we talked about how it was being received in the state media and on the street in China. Has that reception changed since the whole spat over Taiwan?
Well, it has changed. And I think Trump is also making a mistake here. Initially, most Chinese were fairly welcoming of Trump. They liked his sort of big stick attitude. Chinese like strong leaders like a Putin. And they thought Trump was going to be strong and be more pragmatic. Instead of criticizing China for human rights and political issues, Trump would try to do business. That was before the call. After the call, a lot of people said, well, why is Trump doing that? But you know what? We're not going to criticize him too much. And actually, the state media, I think, also is fairly low-key and saying Trump shouldn't do this. Trump needs to learn more. But they weren't frothing at the mouth. It's only when Trump then started tweeting and started to say, maybe we need to rethink the One China policy, that's when you saw two things happen, Orlando. The first is the state media went after him, said that he was naive, didn't understand things. And then second, you started to see him losing popularity amongst everyday Chinese people. Whereas before they liked his strong tone and they liked his rhetoric, they're now saying, well, wait a minute, why is he attacking China for this sacred One China policy? He's going over the line. He's creating a dangerous situation that could lead to war. So he really needs to slow down on that, because he's alienating Chinese and he's really creating, I think the situation that could cause to military friction.
And we've talked about this before, but I mean, you've lived in China now 20 years. You've written about it. You've written two books about it. How easy is it for you to write something like the column you wrote, which is quite a controversial line in a lot of ways? And are there any risks to writing as a foreigner from that point of view inside China?
Well, I think it's important that everyone knows that I am fairly supportive of China's communist government. I think overall, I've been in China about 20 years now. And I think my opinion on them is very similar to most Chinese. I mean, you look, most surveys from Anthony Seitz at Harvard Kennedy School of Government, as well as the Pew Center, says that about 80 to 85% of Chinese support the direction the central government is taking the country. Mm. And I would fall into that. You know, I'm generally supportive. That said, I think you are allowed to criticize and push them into a way that you think would strengthen China. And I think it's very clear that I'm not criticizing China because I don't like China, that I'm not criticizing China in order to contain it. I criticize in order to strengthen. I think the government is fairly open to hearing different voices as long as it's constructive and trying to strengthen the nation rather than put it down. There's also a degree of self-censorship within the state media here, you know, and within the country. I think there's a line that people know that you can't cross.
And so how does, in light of that, as a kind of conclusion, you were saying constructive criticism, how should China now deal with someone like Trump?
Well, I think China needs to be the responsible player, which they're becoming.
Right.
Okay, so I think first you have President Xi Jinping is going to become the first Chinese president ever to go to Davos for the World Economic Forum in January, or at least that's what the rumors say. He's also saying, let's push for free trade. Because at the end of the day, you know, Trump is saying, let's take away TPP, let's take away free trade. But at the end of the day, free trade benefits most people in the world. And
yeah,
it certainly benefits the nations of Asia. Okay. Everybody's seen, you know, poverty has been alleviated over the last 30 years because of free trade. So what China needs to do is come in and show that they're the responsible player, show that they're open for business, show that they want to create good, positive trade deals with their neighbors. And that's what they've been doing. You see the Philippines, you see Malaysia have both gotten a lot stronger to China over the last 3 months, even though most American pundits said that China was straining ties with the South China Sea with its neighbors, but that clearly is not the case. China needs to take the lead in, you know, with their new One Belt, One Road initiative, as well as the Asia Infrastructure Bank that they're spearheading. It's really clear that the world is looking for an economic superpower. Then China can really fill in that vacuum, because a lot of the world's nations really, frankly, are puzzled. And they feel insecure about Trump and what their nation's relationships can be with him, because the guy clearly doesn't have a moral compass in terms of he signs an agreement and sticks by it. He's the type of person, it seems, that will constantly renew and renegotiate agreements in order to better his own business. And that works when you're a real estate developer putting in a casino somewhere, but it doesn't quite work when you're thinking in 50, 100-year periods with other nations that view you not as somebody they dislike, but view them as an enemy.
Yeah. Thanks so much for your time, Sean.
Thank you.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Orlando.
And now over to Samina. Welcome, Samina. Samina is a Romanian journalist based in Beijing. She writes for Quartz, Al Jazeera, and also IB Times UK. She's been there about a year and a half. So, Samina, what's going on over there with regards to this latest news about the drone and Trump and so on?
Well, the Chinese state media are tackling this issue. I mean, they write about everything that Trump tweets about at this point. And the latest issue was, of course, the drone that the Chinese captured in the South China Sea area. And the Chinese government declared that it would return it to the U.S. In the right circumstances. They said something along those lines. But then, of course, Trump tweeted that China should keep the drone. And then the next day, the Chinese state media started writing about the issue. The China Daily, which is an English language newspaper that is state-owned by the Chinese government, said today that Trump's inexperience in diplomacy might lead to confrontations between the two nations. And also Global Times, which is also a pretty prominent publication, said that Trump's demeanor is, quote, unquote, lagging far behind the White House spokespersons. So I think at this point, Trump is scolded by the Chinese media. And also there are specialists who are saying that if Trump continues along these lines after he takes office, the Chinese government might become more harsh, I guess.
Yeah, aggressive. What about on the streets? I mean, are people, because obviously the Chinese government uses the newspapers kind of as their mouthpiece to the world, particularly the English language ones. But on the streets of Beijing, I mean, are people talking about it? Are they skeptical about the whole drone thing? Do they think it was some sort of, you know, espionage, as I understand has been suggested?
Well, I don't know if the Chinese, like, if people on the street get into so much detail. Right. When it comes to, like, daily news, not many of them follow international news or, like, news that concern China internationally on a regular basis. But I think there's a lot of interest among people in China for Trump in general.
Yeah.
I think there's a weird fascination for him. And a lot of the people Chinese people that I've talked to over the past few months have said that Trump is interesting, and he's fascinating to watch, and he has an interesting personality. And of course, I think a lot of people also recognize that he is an unusual world leader. So they are watching with interest the interactions between him and the Chinese government. But I think Trump is almost seen as a caricature.
Yeah.
He is prominent. Like, for example, a Chinese woman was telling me that, I mean, Chinese are used to being exposed to strong male political leaders. And she said that even now after the election, that was right before the final election in the U.S., but she said that even after months of campaigning in the United States, when she heard the name Clinton, she still thought about Bill Clinton, not about Hillary Clinton.
Interesting.
So I think it was easier for Trump to get the Chinese people's attention than it was for Hillary Clinton during the campaign.
I mean, I would have thought that the kind of issues that we've been upset about here, the kind of the allegations of racism, of sexism, I would have thought that they would have been felt in China as well.
Again, I don't think people followed those things in that much detail.
Right.
I think also the Chinese government has been good at painting the election and the result of the election in a way that serves its cause, meaning Trump is kind of an example of what can go wrong with democracy. And the Chinese state media have mocked him, and they have had lots of occasions to do it, right? So I think some Chinese people also see that as an example of how democracy can go wrong.
And what about fears of, do people talk about the kind of worst case scenario, fears of like conflict with the US or low level or, you know, some sort of military engagement over the South China Sea? Do people think about that, or is that too kind of going too far?
I haven't heard anyone talk about that. I mean, maybe people think that, but it's not, I mean, conflicts of this sort are not necessarily a topic that comes up easily in conversation here.
Yeah, I suppose people are quite guarded, aren't they? They don't want to perhaps talk about issues like that, particularly with a journalist.
Yeah, and also I think the South China Sea is not usually a topic of conversation here. It is much more so in the West and in the media, but I think regular people don't talk so much about the South China Sea. I think Trump is a much more appealing and easier topic for them than something that's quite delicate and complex.
Sensitive.
Yeah, sensitive, yeah.
Thanks so much for your time, and good luck. Thanks for talking to us.
Sure, thank you, Randall.
So that's the situation over in the Middle Kingdom at the moment. We've included rich links to some of Sean's columns and Samina's articles in this podcast, so if you're listening on Acast, be sure to go back and check them out. There's also plenty more news and analysis on the website about China. For more information, go to ibtimes.co.uk. Lastly, if you like this podcast, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review. We're taking a break over the festive period, and we'll be back in the new year. Have a good Christmas and take care.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.